Think back. Where were you in May of 2020? Like many other educators, I was preparing to close out the most unique school year in my time as a teacher after spending the past couple months trying to figure out how to teach online from my kitchen table while also navigating the uncertainty and trauma of a global health pandemic.
Hey guys, this is Table for Four. This is your boy Stefan, and welcome back to another episode on the podcast. Today, we will be focusing on how we are slowly adjusting to a post-pandemic world and how it has affected education, family units, workspaces, social media, and how we interact with the world. Adrian, can you tell us more about this episode?
Of course I can. What's going on, listeners? On today's episode, we will be talking about how the conversations have changed post-pandemic. In a different world where we had to relearn to socialize again and learning slowly to go back to the normal. What is normal anyway? Well, we are not sure either, but maybe we can find out together. Are you guys ready?
Yes!
Cue the music.
This is Andre.
This is Adrian.
And this is your boy, Stefan.
And this is Table 4, a family conversation podcast. How is everybody doing?
We are doing
good. We're doing great.
You guys good?
Mm-hmm. We're good.
We're going to attempt to answer some of these questions. How did the pandemic change the world? How was life before, during, and after the pandemic? How has this affected education, family units, workspaces, social media, and how we interact with the world today? Me being I wouldn't say a frontline responder, but being a frontline worker, I was out there in the trenches. So I saw.
You saw things differently.
I saw things differently.
Yeah, for sure.
It was a little tough. I saw a lot during the pandemic. I see a lot of, it was just a sad place to be, especially going to work with a mask and everything, but it was tough. But we're also going to talk about what is a collective experience. And what do we do to tell our children?
I think the first thing is to tell them that it was going to be okay.
Yeah.
But guys, we want to go right into it. We want to start with today's topic with a conversation with a video from a TED Talk presentation and educator Christian Nguyen. Now, quick story. I was listening to podcasts as usual, and it was recommended for me to go listen to a TED Talk daily. And this was one of the presentations that came up. So we're going to sit down. We're going to take a look at this video together. It's about a 10-minute, 11-minute clip. But it highlights how educators really had a tough time continuing with teaching virtually and things of that manner. But it's such an important thing to talk about how things happen before, during, and definitely after the pandemic. If you can really take away some of the information that we want to go through today, is really about, will we ever be the same? You know, and the straightforward answer is no, we will never be the same. We have to also give credit, you know, that we are more resilient than we even realize. I know for a lot of frontline workers, that was a difficult thing, but we have to give more credit to ourselves. Another thing is that not everybody is healing in a healthy way. And yeah. I know that you mentioned something to me about that before.
Yeah, and not everyone processes crisis the same.
Right, right.
We all deal with it differently.
We sure do. And really important that we still have a long way to go. So if we can go up and pull up the profile for Christian Nguyen, who's one of the educators who's presenting. I love this quote that was posted up on TED Talks. It says, Christian Nguyen believes in the power of education to transform individuals to promote equality, inclusion, and healing in communities. If you can go and pull up that clip, and we're all going to sit down, we're going to listen, take our notes, and really understand where Christian is coming in. And the title of this video is 3 Steps to Tell Children, or How to Help kids process traumatic events.
Think back. Where were you in May of 2020? Like many other educators, I was preparing to close out the most unique school year in my time as a teacher after spending the past couple months trying to figure out how to teach online from my kitchen table while also navigating the uncertainty and trauma of a global health pandemic. And then, on May 25th, 2020, George Floyd was murdered in police custody in Minneapolis. In the wake of this tragedy and the days of civil unrest that followed, my colleagues and I realized we couldn't just keep showing up to our virtual classes to teach math and science and reading and writing as if everything was fine. And so we gathered on Zoom one morning to face an urgent question. What do we say to the kids? Since that day, I've started reflecting on more moments like this. Growing up in the 80s and 90s, I remember my parents telling me about two specific dates where they remember exactly where they were and exactly what they were doing. These were the dates that President John F. Kennedy and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. were assassinated. A generation later, these memorable events for me were the Columbine school shooting and September 11th, 2001. The more I reflected on these where were you when moments, both as a teacher and then later as a social and emotional learning specialist, I realized that they share distinct characteristics. They're collectively experienced. They're disruptive to daily life. And often they cause a shift in beliefs, behaviors, or even policies. And today's young people, perhaps due to globalization or social media, may be faced with even more of them. And so, educators like me, I assumed, must be faced with even more of these what do we say to the kids moments too. So I've actually done quite a bit of study of this question. And I'm going to tell you what we say to the kids. And not just for educators, but for parents and caregivers and anyone who interacts with or supports young people. In my doctoral research, I came to call these moments consciousness-shifting current events, which are occurrences that have a profound collective impact on the community, state, or nation where they take place and usually cause a change in awareness, attitude, or behavior among those impacted by it. I'm going to share the insights from my research with you today, but I have to first offer a disclaimer that since it's not yet published, hope to do that this spring, I am going to focus on general, broad conclusions and leave out any personal details that could be used to identify my participants. And so with that in mind, the first broad conclusion I want to share with you is that silence is not an option. The educators I spoke to told me that it was a moral imperative to address these events with students. If it wasn't clear before, the era of COVID-19 has made it clear now that education is an essential industry. And as frontline workers, educators are tasked with more than teaching. They're responsible for supporting the physical and emotional well-being of students amidst a wide variety of social crises and collective traumas. Natural disasters, civil unrest, racial injustice, community violence, and of course, a global pandemic. All of the educators in my study expressed some degree of self-doubt and a lack of confidence addressing these topics with students. Yet in the stories they shared and the strategies that they shared with one another, I discovered that actually most educators actually do have an implicit understanding of what needs to happen in those moments to get students back to a place of learning. And so today I'm going to share with you the three key moves that I saw educators making, the steps they took to facilitate community healing in their schools and classrooms. First, they sought to restore a sense of safety. Now, here's what this looked like. In one classroom, it meant facilitating breathing and mindfulness exercises to help students self-regulate, to soothe the fight or flight regions of their brain that had been activated after a tornado swept through their region and destroyed a nearby town. Another educator told me about a student who was a refugee from a country in political upheaval. And on the day of the US Capitol insurrection, this student was particularly distraught and inconsolable in comparison to her peers because her belief that the turmoil she had left behind in her home country could not and would not happen here had been shattered. She was worried that her parents were unsafe and she wasn't going to be reunited with them at the end of the school day. So the teacher reassured the student that she and her family were not in any physical danger, and then took out a map of the United States to demonstrate that although, yes, what was happening in D.C. was in the same country, it was nearly 3,000 miles away. By focusing on safety and security, these educators prioritize what Maslow tells us are our basic human needs. The lesson I learned here is that when bad things happen, we don't jump right to analyzing the root causes that got us here. We don't try to figure out who's to blame or even how to fix it yet. We simply try to hold it together and make sure our people are protected. But of course, we don't and we can't stop there. After restoring physical or psychological safety, educators engage in heart work. That is, they tend to emotions, both their own and those of their students. This often involves with educators modeling their own vulnerability, admitting they're scared or uncertain, or don't have all the answers and feel anxious about that. It also involves creating space for students to do the same. Many of the educators in my study talked about using talking circles as a way for students to process what they're going through without judgment. One told me about using a virtual talking circle for both adults and young people to navigate feelings of grief and loss and fear associated with coronavirus. A theater arts teacher shared with me how she helped students process the death of a classmate. Realizing that students didn't feel comfortable talking openly, she led them in a silent activity to create artistic representations of their thoughts and emotions. Now, heart work can be hard work, but here's why it matters. When we navigate our emotions, it moves us from that survival part of our brain to a more emotionally regulated state. And do you know what else is possible when we're operating from that calmer state? Connection, love, belonging, community. So it's by reinforcing and strengthening the relationships that we have with one another that we get through the hard times. It's how we develop positive coping strategies and ultimately resilience. And this connection, this sense of we're all in this together, is what cultivates hope and leads us to the final step, empowering action. Now, we've seen this many times in various social movements, but powerful and inspiring action is happening on smaller scales and without social media coverage in classrooms and schools all over. In the days after 9/11, a teacher took a page from the Mr. Rogers playbook by looking for and honoring the helpers. The teacher talked about firefighters and first responders, faith leaders from a variety of religions, everyday people providing food, shelter, and support to their neighbors. The day after the 2016 presidential election of Donald Trump, students whose families were primarily undocumented expressed rage and terror, fearing that their families and they would soon be deported. Recognizing their sense of helplessness and hopelessness, their teacher went to work creating opportunities for students to learn about how to get involved in political advocacy and activism. And when community violence took away students' outdoor recess because it was deemed too unsafe, they started a podcast. And they used that platform to raise awareness, build support among community leaders, and plan a peace march. What's key here is that we don't let ourselves or our people get stuck in the yuck. Rather than dwelling in despair, we mobilize. We reject helplessness and deficit-based thinking and harness our individual and community assets to advocate and agitate for change. Jin Wright calls this healing-centered engagement and tells us that this approach to addressing trauma requires a different question that moves beyond what happened to you to what's right with you. And it looks at those affected by trauma as agents in the creation of their own well-being. The idea here is that it's by finding what's right with all of us, our collective strengths, that we can begin to heal and transform ourselves and our communities. And so I return once more to the question, what do we say to the kids? We say to the kids that it's okay to feel scared and vulnerable. We say to the kids that our safety was taken from us, but we will together create safety once again. We say to the kids that it's time to start the heart work, and we will show them how to do it. We tell them to keep feeling because our feelings are what makes us human and what will help heal us. And finally, we say to the kids that we must rebuild together through action, each and every one of us. Today, I hope you will feel empowered. I hope we will all feel empowered to support our communities, our educators, and our young people in healing. And so the next time a consciousness shifting event happens, we'll not only know what to say, we'll know what to do, and we'll know how to be. Thank you.
If he sinks this, what do you say to the kids? I mean, I guess we have to say it's okay, but like, how would you say it to like them? Like, kids, it's gonna be okay. Or kids, it's gonna be okay. Like, how would you explain it to them? And it kind of depends on how old they are as well. Because if like a kid that know that has consciousness, everyone has consciousness. How would you tell them? It's a little confusing. Like, how would you explain it to them? Like, would you have to sound panic? Would you have to sound calm? You have to sound like you're not afraid. Like, how would you explain it?
Okay. So let's take a step back, right? After this presentation, a great story, a great presentation by Christian Nguyen, that she really took apart the different approaches and looking at how we as educators, as parents, everything changes, right? But it's how we react to those changes is one of the best responses I can say. When it comes to what do we say to the kids, it's all about being calm. We cannot come in an uproar. We can't be in a panic. We can't. Because you're more likely to make more mistakes along the way if you're not calm. You have to think of the conversation. We have to think of everything prior to coming to you, big or small. We have to approach everything calmly. Now, that might not always be in my case.
What if it's not okay? Like, what are you going to tell the kids? Like,
you have to hold on.
You guys got to remember, this is something that hasn't been seen in so long. You know, educators, they usually have some training. I wouldn't say in terms of like a pandemic, but in terms of like, you know, when I was in school, we had like the fire drills. We had, in case we go to war, what were the procedures in school?
Right, right.
You know, so they kind of knew how to deal with that.
With that, right.
But because this is totally
different. Because those are the possibilities, because those right. were possibilities that could have happened. Because right. and when we were 80s kids, we learned, you know, different things of that manner. But
Nobody
could have predicted this because this is similar to like almost like a warfare, like a chemical warfare,
a plague.
You know, you could say it like that, but nobody was prepared to see the extent or prepared the length of time this was going to take.
Right?
Because everyone thought, oh, just 2 weeks, the 2 weeks, stay home for 2 weeks. We were home for like almost a year and a half.
More than that.
You know. So now, how do you console a kid who's growing up?
Who's used to being outside,
who's used to
socializing, who's used to going to school, who are the parents that are used to going to work and going into the city or going, taking the train and commuting or driving. What do you say to those in social media? Who do you talk
to? You know, you're here by yourself, locked up for like 16 months.
We talk to each other,
right. But now.
And that wasn't the case for everybody. There were some people that were alone and people that didn't have families. But this is how the family units were changed. Mm-hmm. This is how the workspace was changed.
Yeah, people got separated from each other. Exactly. And they couldn't meet.
And it was so scary for a lot of people because if you were just by yourself, you have to fear for yourself. You don't have to, you can fear for everyone else, but you personally, you have to like have the most concern for yourself. And if you live with family members or other friends, you feel concerned for them too. Because if you go outside and if you catch something, you might get them sick and you might worry them, and you worry yourself, and then it all gets riled up to one like big pile of just stress and anxiety.
And that the question, well, to follow up with you, is the worries about isolation.
Yeah.
If you are by yourself.
How does this affect your mental health?
How does this, you know,
it could lead to depression. It could lead to depression because you won't be able to like see anyone you love or know. And that can include friends, because if you like really miss your friends, like you'll be like really sad because you can't get, because you can't see them anymore.
Yeah. In your case.
Probably.
Like in your case, you remember you went from being in school mid-year to being homeschooled now virtually.
And then you went to a different school.
So you didn't have a graduation.
Nope.
You didn't see your friends anymore.
Nope.
You know, some of the friends that you had at one school, they didn't go to the next school.
They didn't go to the next school. Yep.
So you didn't get a chance to say goodbye. Or I'll see you around or take somebody's phone number or like, because nobody expected this to drag this long.
Well, I did have some friends that were in virtual school and I met them in like when we go to school, like for real. Like,
oh, now you see them in person?
Mm. Yeah.
Adrian, did you have something?
Yeah. This kind of goes back to like, I think like a really old episode. It's like when I was in like virtual learning, I never had a sixth grade. He's in sixth grade and I didn't have that. So I kind of just felt like I missed a key part of learning, because like sixth grade's gone, and then seventh grade twice. Right. So it's kind of like really confusing. I wouldn't know how to really react. I mean, I guess it was fine, but
that's not the same.
Yeah,
it's not the same.
It's like higher grades got removed because you might not be able to go there. So yeah, it's like they aren't there, but they're like, they're still there. So like, even if you graduate, you might have to wait like a really long time to get into the next grade because of COVID. Yeah. So it's like they don't exist.
Yeah. Because I had two free passes from fifth grade to sixth grade to seventh
promotion.
Grade.
Social promotion. They weren't going to lift back all these kids because this was a nationwide thing. It wasn't just here in New York.
A worldwide thing.
It was a world thing.
Yeah, it was a worldwide thing.
You know, and I think that they really did try their best to, I guess, to try to help you along the way. But I don't think it kind of worked, the whole virtual
thing. No. But I want to go back to the beginning in trying to answer some of these questions that Andre has talked in the beginning of the episode. So how has the pandemic change the world? Who would like to answer that question first?
Well, I think it made the world more conscious. I felt like people weren't like, I mean, no one's ever prepared, but like, you think that people were like, oh, nothing's gonna happen to us. We are America. We live free. Nothing happens to us. But like, you know, do you think that like they didn't know how to react? Like,
they probably did know how to react, but they just didn't know like how to react, like if they should be like worried or like.
So here's how I will answer that question, right? How has the pandemic changed the world, right? You mentioned that the world has to be a little bit more conscious.
More alert, yeah.
More alert now, right? We have to change the way we look at medicine, right? Medicine has taken a big part in how the pandemic has changed the world. Viruses, we're looking at vaccines.
Distribution of vaccines.
Yep. Seeing how can we develop, you know, new vaccines or whatever the case may be. And even vaccines are something controversial. The mandates have been something that's controversial. People have looked at things in a different way. People are more skeptical about certain things, whether it's mandates, whether it's vaccines, whether it's education, if it's work. A lot of things, a lot of people are more definitely not trusting.
People are still conscious of it too, because people still wear masks these days as well.
Yeah.
And there's still people that might school that wears a mask.
Definitely that's changed. So before the pandemic, we would never see anybody.
Like the closest we see to getting a mask is like for fashion. Like that was just like a fashion thing.
Or if you were in the hospital doing, you know, surgeries and things like that, they would wear masks. But before the pandemic, we would have never seen anybody walk around with a mask.
You gotta remember, a lot has changed. How we interact with people,
mm-hmm.
How we handle money, how we...
inflation. Money went up like drastically.
That too. But then also supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, since a lot of people are not going to the stores, they don't have a lot of inventory now. Because everyone started buying stuff online.
Right. Everything was done online.
Everything was hands-free now. Hands-free.
Yeah. Distribution of resources.
Yep. Distribution of resources.
So, big words. Okay. Another thing I noticed is that makes me a little bit upset is the price in eggs. I think they...
Okay. Think you are jumping 3 years before. We're talking about before the pandemic. This is what we're talking about. We're talking about how we've never seen people with masks before. We've never seen the dynamics that have changed. People are now isolated. People don't want to get in touch with people. Nobody wants to get in contact with anybody because they're trying to stay away from one another. Right? So now, during the pandemic, how was that for us as a family? How was it for you as a family? Right?
Scary.
So it was scary.
Because we didn't want to catch it and no one wanted to catch it. And if you were to catch it, you had to stay home for like 2 weeks. People were so scared. And I was scared because I think I got it once. And I think everyone in the family got it at least once.
Yeah, everybody in the house got it once. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, remember, I was sick for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And you got all of us sick.
And you were hospitalized, yeah.
Yeah.
And now it's required before you go into school.
It was, yeah.
So that's another change. There's another thing that's shifted now. But in order for you to come back to school, you had to be vaccinated.
In order for you to go back to work.
No ifs or buts. You had to get vaccinated.
If you had to go back to school. If you had to go back to work.
In our school, if you didn't have a COVID vaccine, they would like manually test you every Wednesday. Each week, you had to get a swab, get your test results. But that's repetitive. Did you just get a quick shot? Boom, it's like a flu shot.
Right. But they would never have done that before.
No.
Testing never. You every week, every day, seeing or doing a survey saying, oh, do you feel well? Are you have a temperature over 104? You know, things of that matter. They would have never questioned you coming into school. If you were sick, fine. But that's how things have changed dramatically.
Yeah, they don't care if you're sick. They just gonna like you just say, you gotta come to school.
No, not necessarily. Some of the teachers
concerns. Before they would want a letter saying that you were, you know, you were sick. You got a letter, an excuse from the doctor. Mm-hmm. But now it's different. Like they want, did you have a positive test for COVID? That was how it really stemmed to that and how it changed the dynamic. Education, social media. That was another thing. A lot of misinformation on social media. A lot of misinformation. People not sure what's going on. A lot of medical news were being told, oh, this is what's happening. This is how it's being spread. It originally came from China. Just a lot of misinformation being told from the media, social media, all of this.
Are these just theories or just like what actually happened?
Well, this is what actually happened because a lot of the stories that were being told, it first began in France or first began in China. Then they had misleading information. Not everybody sure what's going on. And the really, literally the reason why nobody knows is because this is the first time in this time period we've ever gone through a pandemic. After reviewing this presentation with Christian Nguyen, some of the questions that I have, we want to attempt to answer with some of the questions that Andre mentioned in the beginning of the episode. So the next question I want to talk about is how has this affected education, family units, workspaces, social media, and how we interact with the world? So how does this affect education? Education went on virtual, right? We've had conversations and episodes prior to this that everything went virtual. So when we have education, we're used to having teachers and we're used to having parents. We're used to working in a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And that all of that was suddenly taken away.
Mm-hmm.
So now the teachers and educators, parents, workers, everybody has to be a little bit more creative now. That's the problem.
And this is all new.
This is all new to everybody. So now they have to become a little bit more clever. We have to figure out how we're going to try to still give the education we can through the screen. How are we supposed to control the narrative? How are we supposed to help people still maintain education? This is what you mentioned before, that you got a free pass. Why? Because you're home, you're in your pajamas, you're not really taking things seriously as if you were in a face-to-face, brick-to-brick, mortar-to-mortar places, the school. Right. So that's one thing, right? That's definitely how it affected education, right? Education wasn't taken seriously. It wasn't.
I don't think it still is anyway.
Oh, boy.
Well, no one likes school.
Nobody likes school.
I mean, some people do for, like, I guess, perks of being smart And then another thing was like, you said, like you mentioned virtual cameras and virtual classes. They did that for sixth grade. And then seventh grade, they still did that. Because they were still getting used to like the fact that they had to use masks. People were still going back to school. And then it started getting better and better as time went on. So
yeah, but some of you kids are starting to turn off your cameras.
I kept my camera on.
One time I turned off my camera, went to the bathroom, and I thought I cheated on the test because they said I was gone without telling anyone.
Well, you have to tell the teacher. You have to private message the teachers so then they know where you're going.
Right.
But you might spend like a lot.
So that's how really it's affected education. It's affected the way we interact with our teachers. It's affected the way we are trying to teach precisely. Mm-hmm. It really changed the way we interact. And that's how when she mentioned that when these teachers were trying to figure out a way to still teach effectively, it was difficult because everybody's home. Now imagine you're a teacher and you have kids your own. How are you going to make sure your kids are what they need to be?
Their kids are home now.
Their kids are home too. And you're trying to teach your kids in the student classroom, or if you're trying to teach a bunch of 6-year-olds or 4-year-olds in front of a camera for sitting 5 or 6 hours, it's not going to happen. It's not going to be successful.
So stressful for the teachers.
It's very stressful for everybody.
Think about it. They had a whole, when teachers come back to school, they plan out the whole year in advance.
Yeah.
This was a sudden change.
It was like
in a matter of minutes.
Swipe. Nope.
And this was a test on how the education system will react.
So now, how has the pandemic affect family units?
What about you, Ma? What do you think? Because didn't you work at the hospital most of the time?
When I was working at the hospital, yes, I was there doing internship. It was hard. It was hard to see the nurses being overwhelmed. It was hard to seeing everybody else trying to work. And I was also working in a facility in a clinic with adult medicine. But then unfortunately I got laid off because they were laying everybody off. Mm-hmm. They had to close all the offices, but I was still going to school, but I was going to school virtually for the first semester. And that was just as bad.
But you still had clinicals.
I still had clinicals.
You still had to go to the hospital.
I still had to go to the hospital. Yeah. I still had to go to the hospital. So, you know, that was hard. But how did it affect the family units is that I was home all the time. I was home making sure that you guys were okay. And it was a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety because I had to worry about you guys still going to making the class. I had to still make sure that you guys were up. I still had to make sure that you guys were still doing your work, making sure that you're facing the camera, making sure you have your, you know, make sure you ate. And then I had to worry about my classes. I had 3 classes on and virtually.
And you had a ton of tests and you had to be quiet.
And I had so many exams and I was just like.
Right. Well, you had to go to school for the test.
Yeah, I had to go to
study
school.
At home, study at home. Class virtual.
Class virtual. And then still.
Go to school for the test.
Go to school for the test. Yeah. So.
But for me, it was a little bit different. Because to me, it was like business as usual.
Right. It was business as usual.
Because I still had to go to work every day.
Yeah.
So in terms of also family dynamic, I think it kind of brought us a little bit together. It brought us together because now we have more time with each other. Before we didn't have any, like we were constantly being in school, dropping you guys off. And now we're here together. We did game nights. We did our virtual game nights with our friends and family.
It was fun.
And we eventually started this podcast.
Yeah. And then we started this podcast during the pandemic.
That's how we got here.
Yay. So that to me, when it comes to like those family units, other family units might have not had the same, you know, luck as us. Like it, for us being home, it brought us together. Really did. Right. It brought us closer together as a family, more appreciative and, you know, just grateful that we were able to still have, you know, somebody still working. You know, even though I was laid off, you know, dad was still able to work. And those are the type of things like, what do we tell the kids?
Down.
Yeah. Like, what do we tell the kids? We tell the kids it's going to be okay. It's going to be tough, but you know, we have to, you know, right, we got to maintain.
Right. So in our situation, it was good, you know, cause like I said, I was working. You were kind of working. You found a job later on.
Yeah, I found part time. Yeah.
But still, you know, she worked. I worked.
But I was home. I made sure everything was okay at home, and you made sure that we were able to still
right. You know, so that was like I wasn't worried about like what bills we had to pay because you know what I still went to work. I still came home. You know, and it's kind of unfortunately, certain families didn't have that same outcome. because some families lost family members because of COVID. Their dynamics shifted drastically.
Losing a loved one so quickly and unexpectedly. Many lost moms, dads, uncles, brothers. I mean, people that you would never think, perfectly healthy people, pass because of COVID.
It was so shocking to a lot of people.
So it was very shocking to a lot of people.
I hope those people are still here and still okay. Because COVID is a very, very stressful thing at first. But as time goes on, I think we are calming down. Like, we started to get a lot more, well, now the world's more aware, a lot more alert than it should be. But you feel a sense of calmness sometimes because COVID, when you don't have like, you don't have stress on you, you feel nice, you feel like you're at peace sometimes. But yeah, it does kind of get a bit lonely when you're by yourself.
Yeah, and it does.
Of course.
And then you lose some family members, you feel really sad. And you know, it kind of just depends on how you experience COVID and how you coped with it.
And then how did it affect the workspace? You know, the workspace, since everybody was home, right? It was like, I'm going to get my work done. I'm not going to be bothered. Or I don't have my own space. I have my kids disturbing me.
Yep.
And then when it was time to go back, it was like, oh, I'm not going back. I'm staying home.
Right.
I'm still making the same money when I was home. And you want me to go travel, to go somewhere else, to go to work? No, thank you.
So people were loving it.
It
was a love and hate relationship.
It was a love and hate relationship, especially when it comes to like interacting with work.
I was like, man, why can't I stay home? I want to stay home too.
I want to stay home too.
Driving trains.
Right?
Virtually driving trains.
No, can't do that. So that was another dynamic that was drastically changed, especially. I'm like, why are you going to tell me I got to go to work now? No, I'm good. I'm going to stay home and do the same amount of work and get paid from there.
Yep.
You know? And another thing that really changed is how your workspace was. Your workspace was your kitchen. The workspace was your bedroom. Your workspace was really wherever you were able to make it in your home. So now these office buildings were now not renting and paying expensive rent because there was no need for it.
Yeah.
So now everybody has minimized. Everybody has smaller spaces because they could still do the same amount of work in a different area without paying so much for rent and stuff. So that's how the workspace has changed.
That was an upside. Is there any downsides?
No. I mean, companies had to downgrade, definitely. Yeah. But I mean, that's really one thing that I think that the workspaces have been changed.
Yep.
And especially me having to go back. No, I'm good.
But you know one thing that was thriving? Social media.
Social media.
Everyone was on social media. That's how when you go on social media, you see everybody's feed. You see what they're doing at home.
What they're not doing.
I feel like social media was like the main source of how people interacted with each other when the pandemic was over.
It was basically the only source.
It was like a worldwide group chat because everyone was
exactly
talking. Because like no one really used like social media before as often, but now that the pandemic happened, everyone's here.
And you saw this. And you saw this. A lot of celebrities and musicians, they were doing live streams to uplift people.
Absolutely.
They were doing like all these virtual concerts for free from their homes.
I mean, they could probably still charge.
Yeah.
I mean, you could probably still charge.
And then also there's a lot of companies that benefited. You had to pay to see the virtual event also.
Right. But how does this all tie in to the collective experience, right? So the collective experience and definition by the APA, which is the American Psychological Association, it is a common body of emotional experiences that develops out of an individual's identification. So meaning that we are all suffering from the same problem. We are all suffering from a mutual issue. And now we're able to understand and support each other through empathy, because really, we literally understand what you are going through.
Mm-hmm.
So a collective experience that was really shared was really the basis of how everything was changed. Education, social media, parents, family units. This is how it all changed. And it really changed because we all collectively had different thoughts and fears. So the first thing I want to talk about is the world full of fear. Right? This collective experience is that everybody's fear of what? Because of the virus. catching the virus and because many people were killed during that time of this need. This was really something that was really terrible, unexpected. We didn't know what was going on. The hospitals couldn't keep up with the demand. Frontline workers, nurses had to continue going into work. Doctors had to continue doing the work. And many people were just passing away so quickly that they had no way and means of storing. This is really the reality of it. The other thing that continued with that, it was unchecked feelings. People were not grieving. They were not getting the help that they needed for mental health because the interaction and access was limited, right? Literally, because we were all home.
Yep.
We were literally all home. So now people were not getting the help that they need because they were not able to get that access. You know, grieving. Grieving was another thing because many families had a sudden loss of members and they were not able to do several things. They couldn't gather.
Yep.
Right?
Services.
They couldn't do services.
Funeral services.
They couldn't do any of that because they were forced to not interact at all. So people were not grieving properly. Certain family members would have had a bigger ceremony or a proper send away, but that was taken away from them because they couldn't even do that.
It must have been so sad, not grieving over your family members or even having a group like family and friends and everyone you know just like come to whatever funeral it is, and you can't even experience that.
You can't even have the service.
Minimum to six people.
It must have been so really like harsh on the people because they couldn't feel like the type of person.
The support. You couldn't get the support, right?
Like you were so down, you were so upset, you were so sad, and you couldn't even cope correctly.
Yeah. And a lot of it really, again, goes back to the fear factor and a lot of animosity and a lot of bad attitudes. Yeah. Developed.
Big word,
right? The attitudes that were developing, people were forced to stay home due to that lockdown, right? And it was literally for the protection of everyone. And essentially, everybody's freedoms was taken away, right? People were more likely to break the law and become more aggressive due to that isolation.
Really?
Think about that. If you stuck at home, and everybody's telling you, everybody meaning the government, however it is, they're telling you, you can't go outside, you can't do what you need to do simply because we're trying to control the outbreak. So people now are angry because they're home. They're being more aggressive because they don't have an outlet. You know, they weren't allowed to go outside, right? So this is the reason why there's a lot of unchecked feelings and people are not self-regulating. So this goes back to the presentation with Christian Nguyen saying that the children were not self-regulating because they needed to find ways to release that stress, to release that anxiety and the fears that were taken over because of these traumatic events that was caused by the pandemic. And literally everybody is, a lot of people were just overall angry and frustrated with this situation because their hands are tied. They didn't know what else that they can really do. Mandates, as we mentioned before, forcing people to get vaccines in order for them to go to work. People were losing wages because they refused to get the jab, whatever, you know, however they wanted to call it. So everybody is just a lot of feelings unchecked, a lot of people frustrated. And the collective experience is everybody can tell you their point of view from this collective experience because everybody has dealt with it.
And it will all be different.
One way or another. So that's why everybody empathizes with everybody else because I know what you're feeling. That happened to me too.
Right.
This is what happened to me. I understand.
Different way of experiencing
it. Exactly.
But we all experience it at the same time, but different time zones.
Yeah. So when talking about the collective experience, can you tell me a little bit how your experience with the pandemic before, during, and after? Stefan, why don't you tell me a little bit about your experience with the pandemic before?
It was fine. It wasn't that bad. But now that the pandemic is here, life is like really hard now. Because the government is telling us to stay home when we have to go to school, but they made us go to virtual school. But if we went to actual school, like, and we went inside a school building, like, we would get sick really easily unless we had a vaccine, because you probably wouldn't be able to get into school if you didn't have a vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
So that sucks. You can just wear a mask. You don't really need a vaccine. But you could like, if the school wants you to take a vaccine, they should make it so you could take it, like, a few months or days later or weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Because that just doesn't make any sense.
So how did you feel internally? Were you sad, upset, or were you just happy that you weren't in school?
Okay, the truth will set you free.
You know no one wants to be in school.
No, there's a lot of people that want to go to school.
How about you, Adrian?
Before the pandemic, I mean, I guess my grades weren't really that, like, good, I guess. I mean, I was still, like, learning, like, the basics of fifth grade when it first started. I graduated out of fourth grade. I started fresh, you know, new school. And then during the pandemic, it was a little shocking because, like, it happened so fast. Virtual school. Bam. Passed the grade. Bam. Fifth grade. Didn't learn anything. Bam. Seventh grade. It happened so quickly. Virtual classes. Through teachers. But maybe they're just stressed out teachers. So I guess they could be stressed out. But yeah. And then, like, during the pandemic, people were really upset. People like, still wearing masks to this day. And I guess after the pandemic, we're all feeling pretty good. Before, feeling happy. Like, I mean, not really happy about school, but during the pandemic, happy but shocking, you know? Because I was happy that I had to go to school, but it was a little shocking that I even passed the grade at all. And then after the pandemic, it was actually kind of better being inside of school, because I actually have the experience to learn, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you, like, wanted that experience.
Like, I have the experience right here, and I learned the experience right here. You know what I'm saying?
Do you think things will ever go back to normal? Do you feel like you have some normalcy now, a few years after?
Yeah. I feel like we're back into the old routine again. Some changes that have happened was different school schedules as well. School used to happen later, but now it's happening earlier. So that's a change that I noticed as well. So yeah, pretty different.
But you feel like it's getting back to normal in some way.
Yeah, it's getting back to normal, yeah. Definitely. But if
it took a long time to get there, though.
But yeah, if I have to say worldwidely, I don't know how long it's going to take for COVID to not be completely gone, but just, like,
no, it'll never be
completely
gone.
Completely simmered down. Because I feel like it's still raging on.
It's still, me personally, I'm still around people that do still get COVID. It's not as often it was before. I remember one time when I was working, I mean, every patient that I got in touch with had COVID. So now it's like one or two cases, three or four cases a day, one or two, you know. So it has died down, thank goodness. But it's still out there. So it's not, when we say the word post-pandemic, I think it's really from the time that we've gotten from isolation. That's really the time period that we're really talking about. Because everything literally after 2020, it's still literally happening. So it hasn't really changed anything, you know. So it's still literally after the pandemic. I want to go back to the presentation for Christian Nguyen. She talked about Maslow. So Maslow is basically a beautiful triangle that talks about how the human beings function in a sense of emotionally, physically, esteem-wise. So I'm just going to break down this triangle really quickly for you. So she mentioned that in order for us to feel complete, in order for us to feel safe, we have to develop these levels first. So the first thing we have to meet is our physiological needs, meaning we have to get food, we have to be fed, we have to get water, we need to feel warm, we need to have sleep, we need to have rest. In order to move on with those basic needs, those have to be met first. So then as we continue up this beautiful triangle, safety needs are what is the next area of this tier. Mm-hmm. So security and safety. So this is what she mentioned before. A lot of students had fears. So what they did what? They were able to have virtual circle talks. They were able to have activism, trying to do things with the community. They were trying to ensure that, yes, this is happening, but these are the steps that we're going to do. So we're going to try to make you feel safe. And then now you'll be able to reach your next tier, which is your belongingness and love and needs. Now, because of this, this is a most important tier because a lot of people lost that security because fear was in that, replaced that.
So fear of overcame safety.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So because of the fear, they preferred to feel safe, but fear forced them to not have love needs or belongingness, which is another important tier, because in order for you to feel part of a family unit, those family units have been changed because safety and fear took over. They didn't have the safety, so the fear took over. So then now self-esteem, your esteem needs, meaning feelings of accomplishment. People that lost their jobs were not feeling accomplished because they had loss of wages. So now they couldn't feel they were part of a family because they were not providing. Now they're dealing with mental health issues and having issues with their self-esteem and not feeling or fulfilling their part.
They don't feel worthy?
They don't feel worthy because now it's like, I have lost my job. I can't go out. I can't do this. I can't do that. So each of these tiers are being affected in one way. So at the top of the tier is really about self-fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And that's really about including extracurricular activities. That's really like people, when they were home, they didn't know what else to do. So they had to find ways to be creative. This is why social media blew up. This is the reason why people were doing more things. This is why these concerts were being done. They were doing for free because they needed an outlet. They needed an outlet because they couldn't do it out in the real world. So they had to do it behind the screen.
They had to improvise.
Same thing with people going to the gym. That was their outlet. Gyms were closed. So now they have to find another alternative on how to work out.
And this is why there was like equipment was sold out. Nobody could have access to it because everybody was buying.
Or there
bikes,
was, there was triple the price.
Or they would triple the price.
When they have to do like DIYs just to find out like how to work out, because since working out is like pretty much, I wouldn't say their life, but what we need for basic needs, as in like.
Absolutely.
And then to get like, to maintain your physique, it must have been like super hard to like not find any weights, not find like working materials.
Sitting all day if you're in class, like you're not getting the basic to get up, stretch and circulation just to get through the day, because you're over here sitting all day, my back is cracking, everything, I'm sitting down looking at a screen all day. So this is why this is so important when they talk about Maslow, that these five tiers have to be completed in some way in order to feel whole and complete. But she mentioned about engaging in the heart work. So in order to engage into the heart work, it is really, really hard work. So as parents, for us getting involved in the heart work, that means
the recovery
the
process.
The recovery process.
The healing process.
The healing process.
How do we heal the heart from the damage that was done in 16 months? Because you got to remember, this is a process. This whole, the Maslow triangle, mm-hmm. it's a process. It's the whole mental. It's how your body sinks mm-hmm. and how it reacts to everything. Mm-hmm. But think about it. All this was met within a matter of minutes. Your physiological needs are changed. Now your safety net is different.
It's
now
changed.
Because you have fear.
Yep.
And now your belongingness in the world, where do you belong now? Because everything is shut down. Now you're home.
You're not with your friends.
You're not with your friends.
You're not with your coworkers. Yep. You're not with, you know, you're not the same with your husband and wife.
Now you have low self-esteem now too. Because remember, when you're out there, you feed yourself to have better self-esteem for yourself. And then this comes back to the heart work now. How do we heal the heart in terms of the kids? Because the kids are going through this whole ordeal mentally.
When talking about the heart work, we have to try to connect with one another with connection, with love, belonging, and community. So by these different aspects, she's reinforcing those relationships with one another, even though they've been hard, right? So we have to kind of find the way that we are connecting, and how do we develop positive coping strategies and ultimately getting back to being resilient. The first thing you have to do is recognizing that there is an issue, right? That's the first thing you got to realize, right? You can't go ahead and say, oh, there's nothing wrong with me, and then there's something wrong with you, and then you want to negate it. No, you got to first recognize that there's something wrong. You don't want to do that. So then this is how the heart works, meaning that we have to engage in our emotions. We have to recognize and tap into our emotions that makes us realize that we don't meet these triangles. That's literally what it means. We have to make sure that we meet each of those tiers of that triangle emotionally, physically, mentally. We have to make sure we reach those tiers first and then focus on actionable, meaning empowering action, meaning the ways that we can go about it in helping the community, in ways of getting involved, in ways of raising awareness, and really just simply asking for help. So I just want to take this opportunity to kind of come back and say, what else can be done, right? What do we tell the children, right? We as the parents, we as the educators, we as the children, like, what do we tell them? What do we tell them? What do we literally tell them? We tell them that it's okay to feel scared. It's okay to feel vulnerable. But that is why we're here to help you guys through that, because we're all in this together in a sense. Yep. Everybody is in this together, and it's very difficult for us to really tell everybody that you can explain to me why you're scared and it's okay because this is a safe space.
We're going to rebuild that sense of safety again.
Right. And this is how we're slowly learning to go back into society. This is how we're slowly relearning, you know, yes, we're still walking around with masks. Yes, we went back to school. Yes, we still have to do all these things, but it's slowly, slowly, but surely we have to go back and take it from the beginning. You have to find the root of the cause and then recognize that if there's something that needs to be done, this is the way to go do it. You know, the other thing is just to really say what has made us grow apart was really the pandemic, the separation, the isolation, right? That was really what made it so hard for everybody.
People's anxiety went through the roof.
People's anxiety went through the roof.
Mine did when I got sick.
Yeah.
And I remember when you sent me to the store after being in a house holed up for like 16, 17 days. Mm-hmm. You're like, you need to go out there. I was like, I don't want to go out there. And I went to the store and I was like sweating because I was interacting with people. I've been in isolation for like 16, 17 days and I'm sweating. I ran back home. I'm like, do not send me back out there.
It's hard.
It was kind of scary when we went back to school as well. Cause like for school, we sometimes like, we didn't know what to say. Like, even going out was like kind of scary because what do we say to other people? Like, oh, we just came back from having like a whole year about COVID. Mm-hmm. You can't just pretend that didn't happen. You have to just like embrace it and just let it pass through you.
Just think about that feeling the first day you went back to your classroom. You did not want to be next to your friends. I mean, like, because you've been isolated for so long. Like, did you remember how you interact with people?
I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah. Did you want to interact with people?
Not at that time, but then as you slowly start to get like better and more, not more, but less anxiety, you start to get more comfortable, you know? So yeah, it was a pretty big change. I mean, you were scared. I was scared.
Right.
Who's to say that she wasn't scared? Who's to say he definitely wasn't scared? You know, everyone was scared.
How was your first day back?
Me?
Yeah. How was that first day? Like, did you want to be near people? Did you want to like
talk to anyone?
Yeah.
No.
You still don't do that.
I just really want to go back and talk about just summarizing the presentation. And you know, she had some really great points. Christian Nguyen says that the way that we do that is to have healing-centered engagement by Gwyn Wright from 2018. A healing-centered approach to addressing trauma requires a different question that moves beyond to what happened to you to what is right with you, which really exposes the trauma and as different agents in the creation of their own well-being. So really, it's not about what was wrong with you during the pandemic, right? We all know what happened. We all know because of the collective experience. We all know what happened. We all know all the things that we did or what we weren't able to do. But now the question is not to say what was wrong with you, but what is right with you, right? You have to give yourself credit. You're more resilient than you know.
You survived.
We're still trying to survive and thrive at this point, right?
Made it though.
We made it, right? So when turning and flipping that idea on its head, saying what is right with you, right? It's okay to be scared. It's okay to be vulnerable. But look at on the flip side, you were still able to go get your education. You were still home. You were still able to connect with your family. You had game night. You were able to still talk to people on the phone. You were still able to text people, right? Even though it wasn't done the same way we usually would be able to do it, what was right with you is that you survived. That's the point. And we're still And we did it, right? And
we're still trying. End. Well, maybe not the end, but
we're still trying to do that, right? And the idea is that we're trying to find out what's right with us in our collective strengths, and how we heal and transform ourselves within our families, within our co-workers, within our community. So that's really what we try to tell the children, right? Not what's wrong with you, what is right with you. That's really the approach. So guys, I want to thank you for really coming and listening to this family conversation. I want to thank Christian Nguyen for really opening up that conversation
on TED Talk.
Because with this was really the inspiration of this podcast episode. But really, I just want to say, guys, I'm thankful for the position that we are in today. Even 3 years later after the pandemic, we're still thriving. We're still striving. We're still trying to do what we can do. And hopefully...
I thought I was going to die. Oh, I mean, okay, maybe not like that way, but yeah, COVID was a really hard experience for everybody.
It was very hard for everybody.
But we're still going through it. Let's just hope we make it out of here alive. Yeah,
that's the only thing we can hope for.
Hold on to hope.
But I want to thank everybody here. I want to thank my husband for really making sure that our family was provided for during those hard times, just, you know, keeping it together. I want to thank myself. I want to give myself credit for having to still go to school and still go to work and still have my kids alive and well.
I want to thank you too for taking care of everybody.
Yeah. That was hard. And it was hard, but anxiety, all these things were very difficult. And people are slowly, again, we're still learning slowly how to get back to the normal routine. So Stefan, if you can take us out.
Table for Four, a family conversation podcast, talks about all things family. Listen to past episodes about health, culture, stories, and much more. New episodes are out on Wednesdays and on all platforms. Do not forget to watch full episodes of School Commute Convos on YouTube. Also, you should join us for a live session streaming live on Wednesdays.
We are on Anchor, Spotify, Apple, Google, iHeartRadio, Breaker Radio, Bucket Cast, Radio Public, Stitcher, Amazon, Audible, Castro, Podchaser, Pandora, and YouTube. Or find us wherever you listen to your podcasts. And do not forget to follow, like, and share on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Table for Four. We will catch up with you guys in the next episode.
Thank you, guys. This is Stephanie.
This is Andre.
This is Adrian.
And this is your boy, Stefan.
And this is Table for Four, a family conversation podcast. Thank you. And we'll see you
Bye, guys.
Take care.
Bye. Thank you.